It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. New York Times columnist Gail Collins joins us now to talk about her brand new book, No Stopping Us Now, The Adventures of Older Women in American History. And while that history has its ups and downs, opportunities for older women are definitely more varied now than at the country's founding. Credit goes to a long line of activists, we might say, and trailblazers, plus maybe dentistry and other medical advances, which also play a part in the story, as Gail will explain, and of course, the pill. But there's something else that comes up in the book that might have played a part and still makes news today, thanks to AOC and conservative media: hair dye. Hi, Gail Collins. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So Representative Ocasio-Cortez just turned 30 on Sunday. Did you know that?
I did.
But you point out in the book that the 1971 ad for the product called Love and Care that ended with, "You're not getting older, you're getting better," started out with, "When a woman's over 25, she's considered old." So is that kind of the history in a nutshell?
Well, that's part of it. Part of it is that it comes and goes and comes and goes. The first thing that kind of got me off on the subject was when I was doing an earlier book, I found a letter that was sent by the early male colonists back to England looking for wives. And they said sternly that they wanted people who were civil and under the age of 50. So it came and it went, and it came and it went, and it's coming and going again now.
30 isn't old anymore, but women are still criticized for their appearance, obviously, whether because they choose to or not live up to appearance standards that have changed through, I don't know what, commercial pressure or something else.
Yeah, it's many women who have cosmetic surgery will argue that they're not doing it because they want to look younger for the men of the world or whatever, but because they need it for their jobs, because they don't want to look older than other women, even other women who are having cosmetic surgery. So it's the thing about jobs, and that too maybe will pass, but it's certainly still right now a very big deal.
This factoid from your book: when the 60s began, only about, that's the 1960s, not people's age. when the 60s began, only about 7% of American women colored their hair. Within a decade, the practice was so widespread, the government stopped putting hair color on passports.
Yes.
And that's an amazing fact. I did not know that until you revealed it.
It's just that the world changed once again. And, you know, Nora Ephron, you know, who I quote early in the book, always said that, you know, the reason that, you know, women were now having so much longer lives and so longer careers wasn't because of exercise or feminism. It was because of hair dye. And it certainly does play a part.
And yet, on the other side of that, wasn't gray hair played up as a way of saying, don't worry, I've raised my kids, so it's okay that I'm speaking out about things?
Yeah, that's one of the great periods in the book that I just love. It was before the Civil War, when a lot of women were fighting for abolition. It was very much a woman's cause in many ways. And younger women, who were the ones you would expect to be out there kind of leading the way, when they tried to give speeches, they'd be stoned for speaking in public. They would be called harlots and, castigated. So people like Elizabeth Cady Stanton, particularly Elizabeth Cady Stanton, figured out what we do here is I go out and say, hi, I'm a grandmother. Look at my gray hair. Look how dowdy I look. I'm a grandmother. And now I'm going to tell you all about abolition. And people responded very positively. And she could travel all over. She would travel in trains playing cards with soldiers all night. She could get away with anything because she had gray hair.
So listeners, especially women willing to accept the modifier older, are these the best years? Are they the same for you in terms of your place in society as you think they were for your mother or your grandmother? Are things better, different? 212-433-WNYC or anything you wanted to ask Gail Collins. For years, but never had the esteemed New York Times columnist over for dinner. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Gail's new book, No Stopping Us Now, The Adventures of Older Women in American History. I'm thinking about Elizabeth Warren. I'm thinking about Hillary Clinton, who briefly, I think she dropped it, but maybe you paid closer attention to this detail than I did, started branding herself in the 2016 campaign as grandma.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they thought it would be a political attraction.
And I got to tell you too, Hillary Clinton, she really is into being a grandmother. I mean, she just absolutely goes crazy about it. So that makes part of the sense too. But the interesting thing in this campaign right now, you'll notice among the Democrats, if you look at the top three contenders, they're all in their 70s. And the one that doesn't get talked about as being really old is Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
While Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, that's really all people can talk about. Are they too old? Are they too old? Nobody really brings that up that much about Elizabeth Warren.
That's right. In fact, there was a poll that was released just yesterday. Did you see this? I can't remember which news organization did it. But when I think it was a poll of Democrats around the country, and they asked, is Elizabeth Warren is it 71?
She's 70, I think she would be inaugurated.
Was the question, is 71 too old to be president? Only 4% said yes. But when they asked about Bernie Sanders, and granted this poll was taken after his heart attack, at 79, about a third said yes, and it was pretty close to that for Biden, who's 78. So the version of it that I heard, the interpretation that I heard, I think on Morning Edition today, was that there's really a difference in how people perceive 71 versus 78 or 79. Do you think there might be a gender thing going there too, though?
I do, and I think it's also, what's remarkable to me is that there's not a gender thing going on there in a way. I mean, nobody seems to care which gender she is as far as age goes at any rate. And she just looks so spunky and energetic and just bounces around all over the place. And clearly Bernie Sanders isn't bouncing today. And Joe Biden often looks sort of tired. But the idea, if you had told Elizabeth Cady Stanton, we're going to go down to a time when there are going to be a lot of women running for president and their age won't be counted at all, that would have been interesting.
And thanks to my producer, Lisa, who confirmed that Elizabeth Warren is 70, at least right now. You are right. 212-433-WNYC. And Louise in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Gail Collins. Hi, Louise.
Oh, hi. Sorry. My goodness. Okay. I was just writing notes about what she was saying. So I am in my 80s. Just retired, and when I was in my 50s, I realized, I'm getting wrinkles, and my family history is my grandparents were very wrinkled when they hit their 60s, and I wanted to start a new business and work with corporations as a contractor, and so guess what I did, Gail?
I can't imagine.
Exactly what you said, which completely floored me when I heard you say it, because I thought I was the only one who did this. I had a partial facelift and an eye lift, and I also dyed my hair, because men can get away with wrinkles and gray hair. It makes them more studious and brilliant, but women cannot. And so I did it, and I'm successful. And even today, my sister, who's 3 years younger, we are taken now for twins, which we get a chuckle out when we go out walking around.
Congratulations. That's a great story.
Well, your book, I can't wait to read it, and thank you so much for bringing this to the attention of the world.
Thank you.
Thank you, Louise. Mary Ann in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Gail Collins. Hi, Mary Ann.
Good morning. My experience is about colored hair. I'm 70 years old. I'm in great physical condition. But if I go gray hair, I'm out in the public and I'm doing animal work. And so, which means I'm up and down on the floor, which I have no difficulty with. But with gray hair, I am, are you okay? Can you get down? Can I help you up? Okay. But with my hair back to its original color, wow, you look really great. What can I do for you? May I buy you a cup of coffee? Do you think you can stay an extra hour to work with four more animals? It's a totally different experience, but I would like to add one more. I had a bad experience one day at the Best Buy. Mm-hmm. I went in to have a repair on my cell phone,
and my hair was gray that day. And the young woman said, all right, I'll help you. I'm not supposed to. And then at the end, I said, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. You took the time. And she said, oh, well, most people here, they don't know what to do with older people. I have a grandmother. I know what to do with you. Let me tell you, I had a laugh about that.
I have a grandmother. I know what to do with you. That's a very intense kind of thought there.
My answer also, because I'm quick-witted, was, my dear, with an attitude like that, you won't make my age.
Marianne, thank you very much. You know, it's interesting, just looking at the phone so far, that you've been talking about everything from colonial times to Elizabeth Warren, and all the calls are about hair dye.
Isn't it amazing and interesting? Well, it's because everybody shares that. It's since that happened in the 60s and 70s, since women started changing their hair, everything did change for them. Because suddenly, gray doesn't exist. Really, if you walk down the street, you see very, very few women with gray hair anymore. So people are judged on stuff other than that.
So let's go back to colonial times, where in the book, you already talked about how, I guess during the war, they were trying to send back, or when most of the settlers were male, was that it? That they were sending back to England for marriageable
women. Women under the age of 50,
and under the age of 50, which we would now say, wait, that's old. but the reverse was true, you chronicle, in periods after wars when young women outnumbered young men and domesticity in youth became paramount and assigned value.
Yeah, and if you look through our history, the most important thing and my most important message, if I had one thought about all this, is that like men, the reason women were treated differently than men when it came to age had a great deal to do with the fact that men are judged mainly in terms of their ability to produce assets to make money, whereas women were judged for much of our history as mothers. And once you stop being a mother, well, what exactly was the point of your hanging around? Now we've come to a point where women, pretty much as men, when they're older, more than men in some cases, have jobs, make income, create wealth, and I think more and more they're judged, particularly since they don't have gray hair, they're judged for pretty much the way men are as far as age goes. It's a huge leap.
That sounds like a leap, the way you put it that way. You briefly refer to the fact, by the way, that while the settlers in colonial times treated older women poorly, for the Iroquois, at least before they picked up European norms, older women had political power?
Oh, yeah. They ran the show, really. And this is true of a number. Iroquois were sort of one of the... We know a lot more about them because people were able to go and hang out with them, English settlers and so on. So we brought back a lot more information than
among
some
the various
of the
Native American groups.
But the heads of the councils in some places, and in other places the men were theoretically allowed to run things, but the women had a veto. They sort of had this matriarchal powerhouse behind the scenes in which whatever the guys did, if they decide they wanted to go to war or whatever, then the women would come out and say, okay, or maybe not right now, guys, just go back and think about this again.
They chose the chief.
They chose the chief.
Which means they also had impeachment powers.
Which we think about so very much these days.
That's
right.
It all comes back to that. I was trying to avoid it, but I couldn't help myself. And as an aside, isn't the Iroquois Constitution one of the sources for the U.S. version?
Yes. I mean, we do not talk enough about how much we owe to Native American cultures.
So we're going to move from hair dye with our next caller after this break onto the question of age discrimination and more with Gail Collins, the New York Times columnist, who's the author now of No Stopping Us Now, The Adventures of Older Women in American History. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with New York Times columnist Gail Collins, author now of a brand new book called No Stopping Us Now, The Adventures of Older Women in American History, and Rebecca in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with Gail Collins. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask about something that I have accepted as truth since I first heard it. I can't even remember how long ago, before I was old in American terms, that the number of women in the workplace at an older age tends to be greater, the number of women who remain in the workplace, especially in careers in which they may not be succeeding, because when women experience adversity because of socialization, we tend to view the causes of that as internal and try to assess what we can change about ourselves in order to have a more successful path, whereas men are trained to believe that if something is going wrong, well, the problem is the system, the problem is external, and so they don't need to change themselves, whether it's in terms of behavior or appearance, and so they're more likely to shift into a different career pathway, whereas women are more likely to persist. In my personal experience, because of the kind of job I do, I'm finding that there are fewer women in the workforce in my older age group, and I'm wondering whether this, what I believed was some sort of study, is in fact inaccurate, and that in fact women leave the workforce at the same rate or greater than men. Does that make sense?
Sure. The study I think you're talking about is the Harvard study that was done not too long ago that found that women wanted to work longer. Not only that they were working longer, but that they really wanted to work longer. That this was, and they, because the researchers thought, at least in large part, because they liked working longer. I mean, I always worry when I'm talking about this stuff that I'm ignoring the fact that there are a lot of women who are stuck working much longer than they would like to because they can't afford to stop. But there is a big surge in the number of women who are just staying on because they want to. And as to discrimination, I suspect it's true of both genders, that if you're getting older in many occupations, they keep thinking, look, new blood, we need new blood, we need new blood. And it's against the law. It's against the law to discriminate on the basis of age. It's been that way since the 60s. But the problem is proving it, and it's very difficult. It's very complicated. Basically, there's a problem, especially for women, and if you say, well, I was a receptionist, and when I turned 55, they got rid of me, and I think it's my age, and then they can come back and say, no, it was gender, because we wanted more men, and then that complicates things and tosses it all back and forth. So the bottom line is that age discrimination does exist. It's very hard to litigate, but there are, of course, places like the AARP that spend their entire lives fighting for it.
Rebecca, thanks for your call. Anne in Greenport. You're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Oh, hello?
Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I just have a comment and a question. My comment is, when I was 60, I was job hunting with gray hair and got no interviews. I dyed my hair blonde, and within 2 weeks, I had like 10 interviews.
Nora Ephron was right.
All right. That's my comment. My question is, when you say the appeal of the grandmother image and the older woman, does that have anything to do that they're postmenopausal and supposedly would not be subject to, hormonal rages and varied emotional responses, PMS, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfectly possible. Back in that era, it was impossible for anybody. And when we're talking about Elizabeth Cady Stanton, say, people like that, it was just that nobody, they didn't want women at all. But then once people like Elizabeth Cady Stanton figured out if you looked like a grandmother, acted like you were a grandmother in a very energetic way, you could get away with all this stuff, all these public activities. Women started writing odes to menopause. It was a great thing. And so you're right, it goes back and forth. When Margaret Chase Smith ran for president, she was 66. And one of the LA Times, I think it was, columnists who opposed her campaign said, well, the problem here is that the ideal time to be a president is in your 50s, and women could not be a president in their 50s, of course, because they'd be going through menopause and they'd be crazy. Hmm. So there was I think in the past, there's been a lot more violent prejudice on that front than we see today.
Here in New York City, council members Margaret Chan and Diana Ayala have introduced legislation that would beef up the city's response to age discrimination. And the city, as I imagine you know, already has a lower threshold than the federal government, where discrimination has to be, quote, severe and pervasive, unquote. I'm curious how successful you think legislating against age discrimination has been.
It doesn't hurt, and it's always good to have stuff on the record. If a company wants to get rid of people because they feel they're older, it's hard to stop. It's just very hard on an individual basis to go in and prove a case. But still, people do it all the time, and the more people do it and the more people fight about it, the farther on we go.
Double-edged sword, when we say you're not getting older, you're getting better, it's meant to, you know, glorify or confer respect on the value of experience and, you know, continuing to refine whatever it is that people do as they grow older. But does that also mean, double-edged sword, if you aren't getting better, because some things do decline as you get older, eventually no one wants to know about it?
Well, this is a hair color ad. You're not getting older, you're getting better. So we can't really judge the total reliableness and accuracy of the whole thing. But everything is a give and a take. You know, when you're very young, people think maybe you're not experienced enough to do the stuff that you want to do. Getting older, there are special problems with discrimination. There are special challenges. But the thing that, particularly for women, that I'm finding when I'm, you know, reading and researching, is that it's definitely maybe you're getting older, but the whole situation is getting better right now. So you're moving into a world in which there are plenty of problems, but it's way, way better than it was in the beginning. And can I say one other thing, Brian? The most amazing thing for women my age, for women, I think, of the age of the people who've been calling in, is that I lived through a change in the way people regard gender and the way women are regarded that's transformed Western civilization, and I got to see it, and everything is in the context of that miraculous fact.
So with the enormous changes that you've seen in your lifetime, do you feel it's your mission to make sure younger women know what their elders were up against?
Absolutely. Well, you know, they like to hear. I wrote a book called When Everything Changed that was about that 50-year period when everything changed. And I got so many letters from younger women saying, oh, my Lord, I had no idea. This is really interesting. And I think it's cool when they can hear the stories.
One more call. Pat in Manhattan. You're on WNYC with Gail Collins. Hi, Pat.
Hi. How are you?
Good,
listen
thank
to you,
you
all the time.
Thank you.
I am very lucky. I am in my 80s, and I changed careers, and now I have a great, fabulous life, and I'm changing careers again, helping women over 50 who are frozen how to reinvent themselves. Necessity is the mother of reinvention, and it's very important that these women realize what value they have, and everybody has a skill. And I'm trying to teach women about their skills and what they can do with it. There's lots women can do, and they don't have to worry about whether they're fat or thin or beautiful. They can just be vital individuals. And if they don't need to earn money, there's hundreds of things they can do. But even if they do earn money, or have to earn money, there's many, many things that they can do. They have to be in charge of themselves.
Well said.
Well said. We keep coming back to colonial times somehow. You told
I
me
love
during,
that.
During
Thank
the
you.
Break that that you're obsessed with Martha Washington. How come?
Well, just that the thing that defined women, when you got to the point where women were no longer defined as they were when they were colonial at the beginning, with what they could do, with the stuff they could make, the stuff they could grow, all the wealth they contributed to the family, when that people moved to the cities and that sort of fell by the wayside. For middle-class women, they were identified only as mothers. That's all they could do. And then once they were done with childbearing, it was all over for them. And I kept coming back to Martha Washington, who was sort of one of my favorites. She worked so hard for George. She would take in 300, 400 visitors a year to help with his political programs and whatever. And then George would go to bed at night right after dinner, and she would be stuck entertaining all of these thousands of probably really boring men who came by. She did so much. She went to war with him. She was at Valley Forge. But when they started celebrating George Washington down the line, and women, they talked about George Washington's mother. And he didn't even like his mother. And Martha just fell away with all of her contributions. That was, to me, the symbol of that move away from women as a valued part of society.
That was so efficient. I'm going to sneak in one more call. Wendy in Springfield, which could be in any state in America, but it's the one in New Jersey, right, Wendy?
Yes. Can you hear me? I'm having trouble hearing you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yes. My mother, Josephine E. Jones, in 1967, who may have been the first black woman in management at a Fortune 500 company, successfully sued her company in 1984 for age discrimination. She was 64. The company was moving from New York to New Jersey, and the cutoff for retirement at that time was 65, and they did not ask her to come. If they had asked her and she had said no, no problem. They did not ask her. She did not sign the agreement, and she sued them, and they settled out of court.
Congratulations to your mother. That's wonderful. It's a great story.
And I've written a book about her life, An Extraordinary Life, Josephine E. Jones, available at idabellpublishing.com.
All right. Wendy, thank you so much. And Gail Collins' new book is No Stopping Us Now, The Adventures of Older Women in American History. Sorry to say that the, not sorry for you, Gail, but sorry for those of you who have not bought tickets to her book launch at Symphony Space on the Upper West Side tonight. It's sold out. But I see that you're also going to be at the Chappaqua Performing Arts Center on November 14th.
Yes, yes, I am.
Chappaqua.
Chappaqua.
Any special guests expected?
Wow, no, not that I know of, but we can never tell, you know?
Okay. Who knows? Certain special guests in that category may be on the show this week, but
ooh,
I'm not saying it. Gail, always a pleasure. Thank you
so much.
Great
to be here. Thanks, Brian.